What's going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome back to another episode of the number one sports podcast in Southeast Metro Detroit. It's Teeing It Up with CNV. I am Connor, the C himself, as always, with my co-host V Vladimir. What's going on, man? How are you on this Wednesday evening as we're recording?
Exhausted. This has been I remember calling it a friendship week back in the summer when it was always on mandatory overtime. This has been borderline worse because it's been constant work all day as opposed to just being forced to be online and kind of charging hours, if you will. And so we've got one more day of that, and then supplier heads back to where they're from, and then we have to make all the changes and the problems that we found from kind of some of our testing. So I've just been very involved with work at a level at all angles. So tired. Also just came back from a run, so still catching my breath.
Fair enough.
How are you?
I'm all right. Just feeling that daily exhaustion of the working world. My complaint this week is with traffic, and I've been doing the longer of my two options to drive to the office, and that's partly my fault, but it takes 50 minutes to get through 96. There's no good way to get to where I work, and I'm just kind of dealing with that right now. So that's my complaint to the week, but we've got football to talk about. Should be a jam-packed episode. We're now into the thick of things with the NFL starting this week. We'll obviously mention college. We won't have too much to go over. Vladdy and I were in East Lansing for most of the day, not watching a ton of the action. So didn't exactly won't have the greatest analysis, but it also wasn't really the I'll say the big greatest slate. I'd argue this week one and this upcoming week are much bigger slates for college football.
Absolutely.
But we can kind of get right into it. What do you have from the start before we kind of get into maybe the teams from Michigan?
I remember every time Oregon scored a touchdown, I went to go do a Jaeger bomb with this one Oregon grad school alumni. So did about 17 of those, just kidding, I wasn't involved for all of them, but there was a couple. No, overall, I think you said it earlier in the kind of the run before we were going to start. We're going to talk about Michigan State because we were at the game, and then maybe we talk about USF, the nice story. We'll talk Michigan, and then that's really it because we didn't actually watch anything. So.
I guess big takeaways. I'll start in kind of the earlier slates. Iowa State played another version of Iowa and Iowa State. That was kind of the big noon kickoffs. 16-13 Iowa State. I feel like it's a tale as old as time where every single year we hear about some quarterback or some new kink to an Iowa offense that's going to make them this air raid or this new kind of explosive offense, and they just are the same team every year. And
Well,
that.
explosive offense for Iowa might mean 19 points per game instead of 18.
Sorry, well, they didn't quite get there. They only scored 13. So, not the best showing for them. Those two schools really hate each other, and it's good to get rivalry games that early in the season, because obviously it's rivalry week around Thanksgiving. But to have those types of games where I don't think either team, maybe Iowa State, is still ranked to what is are ranked, two programs that aren't like slobs either in the football realm, not exactly powerhouses, but I feel like it's a nice mix-up because you don't really get a ton of those types of rivalry games early in the season like that. Other than that, I mean, most of the big dogs rolled pretty easily. You mentioned Oregon, 69 to nothing, I think was the final. That's a guy who likes to when make a bet when Dan Lanning said is talked about in the media or goes back and forth with the coach in the media, he's going to run up a score. I know him and Gundy went back and forth on NIL all week, and he was going for two early. He was going for it on fourth down early. He kind of showed no mercy, and obviously they kind of look like they're rolling right now against the Power Five, albeit I don't know what's left at Oregon's or Oklahoma State after a really bad year last year and that performance that we saw on Saturday. Other than that, Ole Miss, Lane Kiffin, shout out him. He said sorry to the bettors for calling a timeout that forced Kentucky to kick a garbage time field goal so Ole Miss wouldn't cover. But other than that, they rolled. Then kind of the biggest story, like we mentioned before we get to the night games, was the USF beats Florida. Their second, was Florida ranked?
Florida was ranked.
So that's their second ranked win of the season, after they kind of manhandled Boise State the week prior. They beat what Vladdy thought was going to be a very respectable Florida team this year, and they kind of
Yeah.
had their way with them. I haven't read too much into what they're all about or what they're doing there. I saw the clips of the coaches going crazy, but they seem to be the early season non-Power 5 team to make it. I mean, they're going to have to play Miami again next week, so that's a crazy way to start the schedule for USF, but I know they're a Big 12 team now.
USF is a Big 12. I thought they were
Are they not?
I thought they were AAC. It's
Okay.
UCF who went to the Big 12.
I'm thinking of, sorry. I
Yeah.
get them mixed up a lot.
I mean, they're all the same. I guess the lat before we get to the actual teams around here, you talked about rivalries that maybe we don't get to play as much and rivalries that have storylines of hatred. Did you see Kansas and Missouri?
I did not, no.
So they bring out a guy with a prosthetic leg to do the halftime field goal thing for $25,000. And this is at Missouri. And he lifts his shirt up. It says FKU. And he turns around and kicks the ball at their sideline and shows his shirt saying FKU to the Kansas sideline.
Wow, pretty good.
You talk
Yeah.
about hatred games that, I mean, obviously it's SEC and Big 12, so they don't get to play each other often anymore. I also don't know if it's ever been a noteworthy matchup between
Well,
both these
yeah.
schools. I'm sure Missouri at times has been good, but Kansas has
That's,
never been good. So
yeah.
it's never been a meaningful college football thing, but that is one of the most ridiculous kind of pieces I've ever seen from a fan. Like,
That's great.
I like how I led this off with the prosthetic leg portion as if that meant anything, but he had a prosthetic leg, so that's cool.
Yeah, well, I think it's because you least suspect anything from like the heartwarming feel good story, and then he does that, and it's like college football is college football. But to the nightcap, let's start with Michigan, since I guess we didn't really get to watch it since we were at the state game. I'm just gonna speak from the highlights and the clips and all the buzz that I've heard around it. Michigan loses 24-13. They go into Norman and kind of get manhandled from what everything I've heard. It could have been a lot worse. Bryce Underwood only throws the ball or only completes 9 passes in the game. The offense never really looks good at all, and people are already calling for Sharon Moore to A, either let Bryce Underwood go off and throw the ball more, or B, for him to get fired all of a sudden. And it's so funny to me, and this is, you could tell this is two state people doing this podcast, because it's so funny how you lost your sense of what you were for 15 years prior to the last 3 seasons, and now you lose one game like this. Granted, I know they went 7-5 last year, but with a, I almost said rookie, true freshman quarterback, and he is kind of the greatest example so far, I think, in at least in this season, of now that you know how much these guys, these top players, top recruits are getting paid, is the backlash comes quickly. And that's on the coaching staff, that's on the school, that's on the quarterback. It all comes very, very quickly now when they know he's making $4 million this season and is going to see $12 million for being a Wolverine. And they don't really look like they're close. I don't even really think much of Oklahoma. We'll see. But it was good to see, because I think this team is probably closer to last year's team than the top 10 team that they were kind of inching towards in the rankings.
Yeah, I think we should start calling them rookies. If you're getting paid $4 million a year, you're not an 18-year-old kid anymore. You're a human being, you're an adult, you have responsibilities, you're making 7 figures a year. You gotta do some things. And as we say that, you're absolutely correct, where you can't kind of handcuff the guy and call this, dare I say, Steve Sarkisian, Arch Manning like playbook where you're not actually letting him be him or even try and fail. Because I think that's the other part where let's equate this to a Dante Moore who is now lighting it up at Oregon, albeit against weaker opposition so far. He'll get his opportunity in the bigger games as Big Ten play starts. But that's a guy who was at UCLA as Mr. Number One, Mr. from Michigan. He's special. And I don't think the numbers, the money was ever 4 million, but he had the hype behind him. He goes to UCLA and he got benched. I think this is just one of those where, like you said, it's you're either going to run, I don't want to say run these, you either throw the kids out to the wolves, kind of like what Aiden Childs did last year, and
Right.
they're going to make mistakes, and people like me are going to harp on them because I think, you know what, you make 7 figures a year, you should be better. I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I didn't say that all of last season. You either do that or you bench them and you hope they learn through practice, through theory, through watching someone more experienced run an offense. And then you bring them out after year one or after year two, and let's say in the case of an Arch Manning. But doing the whole we're gonna call some conservative run, run, screen, run, 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 designed RPO bootleg to the tight end who's hopefully open. You don't do your quarterback any favors by doing that.
No.
So from the Michigan sample, I haven't heard anyone calling for his head, but you know what? He's about to be suspended for 2 games, which
Right.
how the hell has there ever been a suspension where you get to pick and choose which games you're suspended? But we're not going to talk about that. That's not the point. I don't know. Maybe this, you know what? This is good for us. This is easier for Michigan State to get to 8-4. Maybe they can pick off a win against their rival.
Yeah. It definitely was. I mean, it's always good to see Michigan kind of get embarrassed on the national
I
stage.
agree. I agree.
So, on to East Lansing and the fireworks and the team that won in this state. Michigan State 42, Boston College 40, a walk-off 2-point conversion in double overtime for the Spartans. And I'm going to call it, I'll let you kind of break it down as it goes, but I'm going to start by calling this game the 8-inch shot. I'm going to get a little ahead of myself for not being the state guy. I'm still not. I still think this is a that's a pretty bad Boston College team personally, but that was Aiden Childs' coming out party from a performance, in that he looked like the leader that we were promised. He looked like the athlete we were promised, and it wasn't perfect. It was damn near, but that was his coming out party.
Decision making was there. When do I take off? When should I try and force something? When should I just take my medicine and either take a loss or just throw it away? There are future downs. The touch was there. The deep ball accuracy was better or more consistent, I think, because I mean he did hit some great passes last year, but he also had some passes that sailed into the safety's hands. So that looked incredible. And I would love for that to be the thing where he takes off and Omari Kelly is kind of, I don't want to say separated himself, but he's kind of stepped into the wide receiver two role where he's even outproduced Nick Marsh to an extent. But I think that's just game planning where teams say Nick Marsh is the number one. We take him out of the game. We make the others beat us. And Omari Kelly has so far through 2 games shown that he can be that second option that it actually is worth covering, that actually is worth paying attention to and devoting some of your defensive game plan over the week as an opposing team to stopping him as well. So I'd love to see that. Things I don't love to see is a team giving up 40 points at home. That's not good. And I mean we kind of talked after the Western game. We're like, you know, we can't take any stock in a defense playing well against Western because it's a bad team. And it's not like we went up against some powerhouse here or some ranked team. This is a, like you said, this is a lowly Boston College team that's kind of just trying to exist. And they could have hosted a congressional meeting in that pocket. They could have done the filibuster, could have gone through all 435 House votes, and we would never have tackled any single one of the guys back there. I was incredibly disappointed with the defensive ends and the pressure or lack thereof. I actually ended up, I think it was the day or two later, just thinking who's the last like good defensive end or good edge rusher we've had, and the first name that comes to mind is Kenny Willekes, and that is bad because that's pre-COVID, that is 2017. And then obviously if you want to go back to the actual good Michigan State teams that were running around with Shalique Calhoun and Malik McDowell. But yeah, just genuinely, I mean, that was borderline appalling, giving up 40 points at home to Boston College. You want to say some of those points came in overtime? Cool, whatever, man. That's just pathetic.
And it is
What's the most frustrating with that too is, like you said, the Western thing is we kind of gave them a thumbs up for that performance, and it's been the bugaboo. It's been obviously Aiden Childs turning the ball over last year, but it's been what lost them games last year. It's what lost them games in the Mel Tucker era, and it continues to be the issue. And how are I worry about that when you play a legit quarterback, when you play legit offenses, when you play the Penn States, when you play the Oregons. It's just like
Good thing we don't play the Oregons. We only play one legit offense.
yeah, somewhere in.
I kid.
Correct. You're
I kid.
correct. When we play the Dylan Raiolas in 2 weeks, sorry, that was a joke. That you're just not going to be able to still hang around in ball games until you play good defense. And that, unfortunately, as an underdog, I think a lot of good time it's getting stops and turnovers, and this defense doesn't seem to want to do it again this year. And again, it's very early, and obviously that was kind of just a flow game where both teams were going back and forth and in a flow where it's sometimes you're just trying to get out of there, and it's not really indicative of how you're going to play the rest of the season. But I'm worried there. It was a great win. It was a momentum win. Like you said, under the lights, like you needed that win in the Smith era, and there does seem to be somewhat of a pep and a step in for the program moving forward.
Hey, the rest of the schedule is disgusting. I'm telling you, like 8-4, 9-3 is on the cards.
It was the first, after that, I said legitimately we should be above 500,
Yeah,
and
we're going to the Ford Field Bowl. Let's go.
well, I'll take it. Let's play Toledo. They've got a good squad this year in the MAC.
Oh dear. To the NFL.
Yep, to the NFL. We don't have to break down every game, but can kind of go in order, I think.
I kind of have breakdowns for all the games, or at least for all the individual games in week one. There's a lot of those.
What do you mean?
I'm sorry, individual is a bad word. I guess for the games that kind of get their own primetime slot, because you have the
Oh, yeah.
Fridays and the Saturday and then the Lions Sunday. I've
Right.
got a ton of these, but do we start at the beginning?
Yeah, we can start from the beginning. Eagles, Cowboys kick us off in Philly. 24-20 is your final there. The Eagles get it done. I guess we start with the spit-off.
We do start with this, or what was originally a hit job, because they didn't want to show Dak Prescott spitting at Jalen Carter. They just showed Jalen Carter spitting at Dak Prescott.
Yeah, I don't think it made Jalen Carter's action like
Oh, not at all.
any less ejectable, because he did his was definitely more of a loogie just right at him.
Yep.
But it definitely added a context to the story where I'm like, well, I don't know how I would have reacted if Dak Prescott. I heard some crazy stuff online of what he actually mouthed to him too. I don't know if you saw some of that.
What, did he tell him that he should take a safe driving course?
I heard it's the anniversary of one of the Georgia guys dying in the car accident.
Oh, no.
And he said, "Yeah, your boy's gone," or something like that.
Okay,
And like
that's.
and the like it didn't not look like he said that, but I also like how I couldn't like he could have been saying like 17 different things. That was just one thing I saw online, so and I'm sure it's been kind of squashed, because if it was true, I would have seen a lot more of it. But yeah, your best player gets ejected your first play of the game, and Dallas goes right down the field and has an offensive half I think a lot of people didn't expect them to have, at least in the first half.
Well, I mean, to be honest, it wasn't just the first drive. I
Yeah.
think Dallas scored on their first three. I mean, I had this written down just because this was a game of two halves, except the halftime wasn't actually halftime. It was the rain delay, or the thunder delay, or whatever Mickey Mouse weather delay they gave us. The first portion was eight straight scoring drives by both teams combined, and then we went to delay. And we had seven straight drives that did not result in scoring, and that was the game. You also saw maybe the effect on players like Landon Dickerson, who we knew about the knee injury going into it, but he was apparently on painkillers for his back or something. And he comes back out, and they're trying to warm him up and work him out, and like he just can't do it. And the very first thing that like someone said was like his painkillers definitely just wore off, because they were not expecting an hour and a half delay. And so now he's actually feeling how much pain he's in, and he just can't play. So You I mean, you basically just saw, and this kind of happened in another game as well, but you see the difference of offenses might be able to get into a flow, but once they go to some kind of delay, they come back and they have no idea what they're doing. The young players kind of have trouble mentally re-engaging into the game after they go back out because, maybe they pick up their phone and they're talking to their friends, and suddenly they don't realize that 30 minutes later they gotta start warming up again. I guess the last thing I want to say about this is, it's going to be me harping on the tush push again, and I know I've done that a lot, but this is new problems that I have with it. I don't know if you saw some of the aerial views of the Eagles lining up. The center doesn't have the ball in front of him. He has the ball under his head, which automatically makes it a neutral zone infraction on himself. The left and right guard are also lined up over the ball that is not in front of the guard or the center, which also makes it neutral zone infractions on them. And they did that three or four times, and they're never penalized for it. I hate everything about this play.
Yeah, I think I've taken in the past when you've said this of like, boo-hoo, stop it. But I do agree when you're setting up like that and the pictures that you sent them in group chats is that is kind of where I draw the line personally.
Like,
Yeah.
it's already a bullshit play. If, at least if it's gonna be bullshit play, officiate it by the written rules. They don't even do that. So it is what it is, just nasty. But I guess the Eagles did what the Eagles needed to do. They got a win. Like you said, it wasn't pretty without Jalen Carter, and then you kind of realize some of the other older veterans that have no that are no longer on that line, the Fletcher Coxes, the Brandon Grahams of the world. Yeah, there's going to be some learning. On the bright side for the Eagles, the one game suspension that Jalen Carter got was considered to be the Cowboys game. I assume the league said, well, you took no snaps from scrimmage, so we'll count
Right.
that as suspension. So he will be playing in week two. And maybe this time he will not need to react to somebody saying something about anything of his. And hopefully he can play some football.
On to Friday, Chargers 27, Chiefs 21. Chiefs open up 0-1. And my first takeaway was don't freak out on the Chiefs, freak out on the Chargers. I've said I've been very high on the Chargers. This was not the Aiden Childs coming out party for Justin Herbert, but this is the Justin Herbert you want to see for a complete 17-game season if he's going to be the guy that people have kind of harped on him being for the last several years. I guess start at right at the beginning, also a crazy start to this game. Travis Kelce not only gets engaged, but engages with his teammate's shoulder, knocking him out of the game. That was a great start, and he. For three quarters, he had the stat line of it was zero catches, one yell at Jawan Taylor, one slap by an opponent, and one injured teammate by himself. And then he went off for the long touchdown and did that stupid celebration. So that was my Travis Kelce rant. I don't think this is like another like don't freak out on the cheat, don't overreact to the NFL. Like I said before we started recording, don't overreact on the Chiefs. They're going to be fine. They lost to the Lions, remember, 2 years ago on opening night. This was damn near opening night. They do the same thing to a division rival. I didn't think they looked awful in any stretch. I thought to me it was more how good and dynamic the Chargers and Justin Herbert looked on offense.
Yeah, from the Chiefs' perspective, this is kind of the continuation of them playing football with a collection of wide receiver threes, and the
Right.
continuation of them just deciding to destroy their own receivers' bodies after last year, where you had Patrick Mahomes separate Rashee Rice's leg from the rest of his body. But yeah, it was a classic Chiefs game where everything is seemingly going wrong for them. They can't do anything right. And then an Amorian Hampton rookie mistake to go out of bounds and to let the Chiefs get the ball back. And then 40 seconds left, they hit a bomb to Tyquan Thornton. They get themselves in field goal range, run the kicker out, hit it, and suddenly it's a one possession game. And you're thinking, oh, well, here we go. This is classic Chiefs. They'll take command of the second half, this and that. And it didn't happen. It kind of turned into a game of chase where the Chargers would make it a two-score game. Chiefs make it one score game, Chargers two score, Chiefs one score, and they can never really get that ball with a chance to tie or take the lead. But I think your point on Herbert is correct. He outdueled Mahomes. He was good through the air. He was very, very good on the ground and picking his moments to take off, picking his moments to use his physical attributes. Obviously, most notably at the end of the game, I think on that third and long, and you're thinking, oh, maybe the Chiefs get the ball back and we're going to set up for some more classic bullshit. And then Herbert kind of scrambles to the bottom of the screen down the right side of his offensive line. And 25 yards later, he slides and then the Chargers win the game.
Yeah. On to Sunday. The 1 o'clock slate, where do you want to start?
I mean, I'll say Giants Commanders, not because anything in this game was noteworthy. The only reason I want to bring it up is because after 1 week, Brian Daboll in his post-game presser says, I can't guarantee Russell Wilson is my starter anymore. And I think since Sunday, he's
Yes,
kind of
they
said
did,
he will
yeah.
be the starter. But for 60 minutes of your season to have gone by and you're already considering benching Russell Wilson, I mean, that's just classic Giants. By the way, what does benching Russell Wilson mean? Are you going to throw Jackson Dart to the wolves behind that disaster of an offensive line? Or are you going to
I
go put
think you have
Jameis
to.
in there and tell him just to sling it 45 times?
I think you have to. You bring in the young kid and try to give some kind of like Malik Nabers gave up on Russell Wilson 6 plays into the season.
Oh yeah, I was going to bring that up. Neighbors kind of had his version of a Tyreek Hill moment, just sitting there melting down on the sideline, screaming. Yeah, so there's nothing about that game that was noteworthy. Just wanted to make fun of your original favorite football team and how miserable they are.
Yeah, I on the commander side, they'll get their test Thursday night against the Packers to kind of see where they're at.
Oh yeah. Next game, I want to highlight Dolphins Colts. We
Yeah.
didn't get to watch this too closely because it was part of the 1 p.m. slate, and so it was kind of one of the 17 screens on. But if you get your doors blown off by Daniel Jones
Yep.
and a Colts team that is meh, that's the first unraveling of the fabric of the Dolphins to end them as a top five pick. Tyreek Hill was the second fabric, just once again melting down on the sideline, screaming. You've already got the Kansas City reunion trade rumors. You've got awful
Auto.
offensive line play, awful defensive line play, a quarterback who
Yeah.
has no idea what he's doing, and
Yep.
those windows and those pockets that he used to hit so well are now becoming predetermined, and you're watching players just drop to where the space is and just wait for the pass to hit them in the hands as opposed to tight or to his receivers. Just yeah, putrid performance. If I want to be fair, we can say the glass half full version is that it's only 1 week and every loss or win counts the same. But when you do, or when the performance is that bad, I don't think there's a glass half full. I think Mike McDaniel is looking for a new job by Halloween. And this team is squarely in contention for a top three pick, let alone top five.
Yeah, I was kind of like, I'll believe it when I see it in the reverse, and that they've been what I would call fairly competitive in his era, and this has been just an unraveling at the from the end of last season till now.
Yeah, and I just think I remember bringing this up in when we were doing kind of some of the previews. And I did say I thought that the Dolphins would be bad and they would implode this year, but I think the key is that offense. I think it was in 2022 when they were super high flowing and flow, or maybe it was 23, but they were out there. They dropped that 70 bomb on the Broncos' head, and they did
Yep.
this and that, and you're like, oh my God, and then it's a copycat league. Teams started dropping two safeties high and limiting the amount of times that Tyreek and Jaylen Waddle could get behind them. And there was just no adjustment there.
Yep.
And there was no ability to come up with a new game plan. It's, uh-oh, now we have to dink and dunk our way down, but we don't have the ability to dink and dunk our way down because we can't protect. We don't have some form of shorter intermediate routes. And it's going to get very ugly in Miami. That's all I can say.
Yeah. Yeah. And on the Daniel Jones side, maybe Kevin O'Connell, quarterback whisperer, we're going to talk about Monday night as well. But that's another case in point through one game.
Yeah. I'll say Bucks Falcons just quickly because I think that every time these two teams play, it's electric and chaotic and off the rails, and whatever script existed for the game gets burned in the very first play. You have Emeka Egbuka coming out party in week one, Baker doing his classic Looney Tunes improvisational football that just somehow works for him. The Falcons running basically 10 straight plays inside the 3 yard line with a couple of penalties on fourth down to basically reset the chains. And then you take the lead and you say, okay, there's a minute left. Worst case, we go to overtime. Then Baker goes down the field, hits Egbuka for the second touchdown over the top. He says, up yours. I'm not coming to play for a tie or field goal. I'm playing for a win. And then the Falcons, Michael Penix, shout out to him. He looked great. He goes right back down the field, gets Younghoe Koo or Young Wei Koo, I don't even know what his name is, in perfect field goal position.
He's bad.
He's not great. He hits the first one. Unfortunately, he was iced for that and it didn't count. And then he proceeds to shank the second one. He actually kind of looked like me on the tee box. Nice little just push right, slice right, field goal kick.
Yeah. He's calm.
Yeah. But I think that's what I've got from the early window.
Yeah, I don't really have anything to add. I mean, early window. Yeah. Was Rams Texans early window?
Afternoon.
Okay. Then yeah, I'm good.
You want to start with the Rams Texans?
Yeah. Something I was I'm gonna completely take off a lot of good things I said about the Texans and compliment you in that I think everything you've said in the offseason and every worry you've had for this offense has come to fruition now. And this is again not me trying to overreact. D'Amico Ryans is a defensive coach, and they looked fine in that game. Actually, a pretty good defense performance against what's going to be a good offense, I think. But that offense has CJ Stroud questioning things, has an offensive line that can't do anything. I don't really think they have a true running back. What's left of Nick Chubb right now? They're a mess offensively.
Yeah. I think the flip side though is maybe this is more of maybe there is a little bit of I guess credit to be given to the Rams. I know in the past couple of years, I think in the playoffs we've said this is a young team, this is a young defense, the Kobe Turners, the Byron Youngs, the Braden Fisks, they continuously draft very, very well in the late rounds. And they've kind of got that just like swag amongst themselves of belief, and they keep rolling. But you're correct. I don't know, the kind of like another team that had glaring holes that may or may not reside in Allen Park, and they just refused to accept that and actually didn't and did nothing about it. We'll talk about them later, but you had a bad offensive line last year, and your idea to fix it is to trade away the only one of the five offensive linemen that's actually been regarded at any point in his career as good. Never understood how that was going to be a winning solution from D'Amico Ryans, and I think John Caserio is the GM or whatever his stupid name is. But they're gonna get Bryce or I pray they're gonna get CJ Stroud tailed. You want to talk about the San Francisco 49 IRs because they're already in midseason form with all their injuries?
Yeah, I mean they squeak out a 17-13 win against Seattle's going to be such a weird team in general for me this year. Like fantasy wise, like aside from Smith and Jigba, like what do you do with that running back room at this point? Like
You do what they do, you split them and you play none of them.
I don't, and they're like they kind of split him in like a weird. I don't get it. Like they give the ball to the guy that's not hot sometimes. Like it doesn't really make sense to me. Sam Darnold looked not great, and I guess 49ers side. There's storyline after storyline. Kittle gets hurt. Moody gets cut. We can talk about that. That was somewhat overdue, and I think it's fun. I think it's. Here's my rant, and I've kind of been. I've recognized that Moody has had his struggles. I think it's pathetic on Kyle Shanahan and why am I blanking on the GM? Famous name, whatever.
Oh, John Lynch.
There it is. Yeah. I think it's pathetic on them that they let that happen, let him go through all that training camp, not it kind of like the Lions, not address an issue, and then he has one bad game, and then you decide to press the button. That just shows that you aren't assessing talent well enough. Like, I think it's more indicative on them than Jake Moody. Jake Moody, I think, is going to find his way on another roster and just needs another chance. And maybe it'll work out, maybe it won't. I just think he needs the change of scenery, but I blame a lot of it on Shanahan and his inability to, I find him to kind of bang his head against the wall to a certain extent. And that's kind of why he hasn't gotten, I mean, obviously he's made the two Super Bowls, but hasn't gotten himself where a lot of 49ers fans have wanted to it, which is the promised land for how good this roster still is. I think it still can win games. I don't think they're the best team in this division after week one, but yeah, how are they going to survive with all these injuries yet again? I mean, we mentioned kind of McCaffrey during the week was questionable. I know that was kind
Purdy's
of
out for a couple weeks too.
yeah. So
Juwan
who
Jennings
knows?
isn't practicing.
And now Purdy's paid and he's playing like fine, but it's a bit of a mess with what's one of I still consider the more talented rosters in the NFL.
No, I'd love to know what Shanahan does to these guys in practice, especially the running backs, because I don't think there's ever been a single San Francisco running back that's finished an entire
No,
season healthy.
never. Frank Gore back in 2007.
All right, well, that was pre-Shanahan, so
Nice.
we're not gonna give credit there to that Iron Man of a legend. But yeah, I don't do we go to Sunday night to the Sunday night game just because that was might have been game of the year in the first
Yeah. And
24
I,
hours of football.
it was game of the year, and I watched seven plays of it. So
Oh, you missed out.
I'll let you kind of go and get going on what just Josh Allen. He's my favorite player, man. He's so much fun.
And he gets to come home at the end of the night to Haley Steinfeld.
Correct.
So
Correct.
he's really got it going on.
He's just cool.
I do like seeing the videos of him interacting with fans. He is a good dude.
Yeah.
I know we've been talking sarcastically for the last couple sentences, but no, he's an incredible guy. You cannot hate him. But the actual football is two quarterbacks that are at the absolute heights of their powers,
Yeah.
two loaded rosters, and two just kind of, I'll say, emphasis on regular season Titan football teams, and they give us the Sunday night football game that we deserved after 8 long months away from the sport. I'll start with Derrick Henry. He is ludicrous, and I understand he fumbled to kind of cost that game, and he put it on himself because he's old and he's a legend. He's allowed to do that. But do you know how we know that Derrick Henry is an all-time football player and may or may not be the last ever Hall of Fame running back?
That
He's
seems a
the,
little over the top, but yeah.
I mean, who else is going to get in? I can't put McCaffrey in.
If McCaffrey had one more good, healthy season, I think he would probably be pretty close.
But fair. But we'll scratch that then. But
Yeah,
he's
yeah,
in
yeah.
year 10 of his career. He's 31 years old, and nobody talks about age or the cliff or the carries with him. They just give it to the fucking mountain.
Well, so that was last year that like, oh, he's getting moved. Oh, it's time for the age thing. And I
And
don't
he was
think like,
like up
and he proved that
yours.
wrong. Yeah. And so there's no questions about it anymore.
Yeah. He's incredible. Fun fact, he is in year 10, and he still does not have as many rushing yards in the NFL as he did in high school.
I saw that.
And while we were talking, this is also kind of funny and kind of ironic because I saw this 5 minutes before we got on to meet each other. It's Nick Saban telling a story of freshman Derrick Henry, and
I think,
He's like, this kid didn't know what pass blocking was, had no
yeah.
idea, and the coaches are yelling at him. And I figure, let me throw him a bone. Let me go console the kid. Let me give him a pat on the back, make sure he knows it's okay. And Henry comes up to him and he goes, "Coach, the only thing they ever did in high school was give me the ball and tell me to run with it. I don't know what
Yeah.
I'm doing. What is football? Give me a
He had
sec.
never ran a play.
I'll figure it out. Let me give me patience, but I'll figure it out." So he's. Derrick Henry's incredible. This game had just moment after moment. You had Chris Collinsworth making the following statement where it is 4th and 2 on your own 40 with a minute and a half left. And and you're up by two. And Chris Collinsworth says, you should probably go for it. And you know what? He was right. The Ravens didn't go for it. Ravens punt it back to Josh Allen. Josh Allen gets the team in range, and Detroit Lion and Denver Bronco legend Matt Prater comes out after, I think, 36 or 48 hours with the team. He caught a red eye Thursday night for to kind of get with the team. Hits a game-winning field goal. Just utter chaos. The Ravens are kind of the kings of blowing games they shouldn't blow. I saw a stat that John Harbaugh has 17 blown double-digit leads in his career, which is crazy.
Yeah.
A, that you've been up by double digits that many times, and B, that you've blown that many of them. So it's just it was a magical game. You had the kind of the classic chaos moments of fumble this, unexpected that, and then you just had the Superman moments where the players put on capes and you're like, you know what, tip of the cap, incredible football game, and this is why we love the sport.
Right.
I don't have much else. Do we go Monday night and then end with the Lions?
Yeah, Monday night, the rookie, well, I guess second year quarterback duel,
The
Caleb
Ben Simmons
Williams,
rookie.
Ben Simmons rookie. There you go. JJ McCarthy, Caleb Williams, Ben Johnson. His first game as the Bears head coach, and they blow a huge second half lead. Vikings win 27-24. JJ McCarthy, who looked like a bum in the first half, comes out and plays with his hair on fire and looks like a leader, looks like a guy that the guys around him want to play for at 22 years old. Looks like he has the locker room on his side. And I'll tell you this, is we can get into the Bears and what they didn't look like, but if JJ McCarthy can just play competent football and play with confidence like that he did in the second half, I'd argue that team might even be better than the Packers.
I would definitely. I said it's like if you get the second half JJ McCarthy, you have a team that is capable of winning a Super Bowl. They were without their best offensive lineman and Christian Darrisaw, and they weathered every storm. The Bears started fast and furious, going right down the field on their first drive, and then from everything that point on, it was classic Bears. So, honestly, that game kind of reminded me of Matt Patricia's first game in Detroit, where we take the pick six back against Sam Darnold and we're all through the moon and it's crazy. And by the end of the night, the fans are chanting JETS, 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 Jets in Ford
Yeah.
Field. I understand it didn't get that bad on the score line. And like, technically speaking, you had the ball in the last 15 seconds to try and tie or win. But it just, what was once so promising. And I'm sure if after that first drive, all the Bears fans are thinking, you know what? This is us. This is Ben Johnson. This is Caleb Williams. We're going to a Super Bowl the same way we thought we were going to a Super Bowl after that pick six. And then nothing. Caleb was incredible when he was on script and he could kind of have plays designed for him. He showed some incredible mobility. Like, I mean, he was fast. I didn't
Yeah.
realize he had that in him, or at least that level of speed in him. And then you also watched the ugly. You
Yeah.
watched him sail wide open receivers. You watched him miss wide open windows. You could have parked a semi truck in one in a couple of those kind of passes through the middle to, I think once was Odunze, the other one might have been Colston Loveland or Cole Kmet. I forget which tight end it was, but you could have parked Optimus Prime in the window that was available to Caleb Williams, and he sailed both of them. He missed DJ Moore when DJ Moore kind of got lost by the defense, threw his hand in the air, and Caleb basically hits the cheerleader in the ass with the football, which is a problem because the cheerleaders are about 30 yards past the end of the line of scrimmage. If I want to try and be fair to him, Brian Flores is an incredible defensive coordinator, and his defense has
Yeah.
stifled many, many quarterbacks. But it got ugly for
Ben
Caleb.
Johnson looked visibly frustrated at times. I think that's the
Yes.
most alarming part for me, is that
Yes.
this wasn't just a Ben Johnson, a new offense, getting out the kinks thing. It was a guy who, as an offensive coordinator is, or offensive play caller now, is notorious for setting up quick things that work out well, and he was missing those, like you said, and that visibly, that was the most alarming thing to me, is how worried Ben Johnson himself looked.
Agree. On the Viking side, I think the praise starts with JJ McCarthy. Like you said, first game, going into a locker room, throwing a pick six, which maybe you thought ends the game because it's now, I think, 17-6, or, well, I forget the score that it made it, but it makes it a two-score game after that pick six, and he comes right back down, leads three scoring drives, starts hitting receivers, playing with some tempo, playing with some moxie. He runs in a touchdown on his own, and it really kind of just shows, I think, maybe some of that mental toughness that he has. You look at it, the energy of both him versus Caleb Williams on the sidelines. Caleb at all times was kind of standing there quietly, just staring off into space. JJ's working with Justin Jefferson. He's dapping up his offensive line. He's talking. I don't want to say he's kidding coach, but he looks like he's alive. Whereas Caleb Williams, like, people aren't going to see this, but like, he just stood there and was staring into space.
Right.
He had, and this is just me ranting, but get that stupid undershirt off from Caleb Williams' perspective. That dumbass gray
White.
fuzzy bullshit that he had underneath his jersey, take that off. That is not, you're not the fat kid in a pool. You don't need that on. It's okay. So maybe that was slowing him down and messing with his brain waves and stuff like that, but that part was a little disgusting. I think another highlight is to Kevin O'Connell, where we know he's the QB whisperer and we know he's solved or resolved, he's resurrected some careers, and we know he can call some great plays. But the kickoff by the Bears with 2:02 left, where Ty Chandler is in the end zone and he's just staring at Kevin O'Connell as the ball's coming to him, as he catches it, and he kind of paused for about a second and a half in the end zone, and then you see the reverse angle, and O'Connell's like, "Come on out, man, kill that 2 minute warning. Let's kill as much clock as we can." I think that was a very incredible move by KOC, because it wasn't some improv. It was clearly told to Ty Chandler, wherever that ball is, I give you the go. You look at me, I'm your head coach. And incredible there. The North's gonna be a gauntlet.
Yeah. Let's get to the other game in the North. Packers 27, Lions 13. I think it's gonna get ugly before it gets better. And we talked about this when we went through the season preview for the Lions, and that schedule is you can't get too down on this team for how bad the beginning of the season might be. I mean, let's just get into this the specifics of the game. You came out flat. Jordan Love looks like Tom Brady in his prime for the first half. The offense never looked like themselves. I'll let you kind of get into more specifics.
Sure. The Lions didn't look like they tried. You get manhandled at both lines of scrimmage. That's something that I can't really remember when the last time that happened. Maybe the Ravens game 2 years ago or last year. I don't remember when that was. When we showed up there and they kicked the shit out, I was like 35-7. The
Those 2 years
years
ago.
kind of go by quickly. I don't know if that was last year, the year before now. You mentioned Jordan Love in that first half. We talk about congressional pockets, or congressional meetings in the pocket for the Boston College game. Was the exact same thing. You could have had a UN vote in the Green Bay Packers pocket in that first half. You talk about Aiden Hutchinson getting dropped into coverage. I don't understand what that is. Same with Marcus Davenport. I don't like their defensive ends. Let them rush the passer. If you want to know a fun fact, Aiden Hutchinson had less recorded stats than Jake Bates. Jake Bates made one tackle. Aiden Hutchinson had nothing of anything. He did conditioning.
Did you want to hear something crazy? Aiden Hutchinson had a better PFF score than Micah Parsons.
Yeah, and that's why I've never cared about those things. And I actually have a different PFF stat that I'm not going to sit here and kill a kid on later, but I don't understand how that's possible. Is what it is. The Micah Parsons thing, I mean, he showed up and he played half the snaps,
Yeah.
and every single time he was a force. He made Penei Sewell look average. There was three times where he just sent him for a hot dog. He had his obviously his classic sack on Goff. He forced a pressure on Goff to throw the interception.
Hunting a hyena.
Yeah. It was, I mean, if that's Micah Parsons at not full speed, dear Lord. On kind of the flip side, that secondary was not great. Terry Arnold going down early made it even worse because you've already lost Rake Straw. Like that's one of the few places in the team where you can't afford to get hurt. So that's an issue. On the offensive line side, this is the second PFF stat I was going to say. Tate Ratledge was ranked as the worst pass blocking lineman in the entire NFL for week one. And this is where it's like, I don't necessarily agree with that when you watch some of the other games and you watch some of the other players get beat. But PFF has their magic formula and PFF's going to do what they do. So, and this is not to say Tate Ratledge was good. No, he was bad. He was ugly. Graham Glasgow was ugly. I don't even know who it was. A Giovanni Manu or whatever the left guard is called. He was ugly. The interior of that offensive line was pathetic. The offense couldn't do anything. There was no pre-snap motion, which is kind of that Ben Johnson special of Jameson Williams is in motion at the snap, Amon-Ra's in motion at the snap, Sam Laporta's in motion at the snap. We're bumping out Jahmyr Gibbs at the snap. You had none of that. It was stagnant. The run game was disgusting. We averaged maybe 2 yards a carry on the pass blocking side. A lot of passes had to get dumped off to Jahmyr Gibbs because there was no time for the intermediate and deep routes to even develop.
He had the most catches with the least amount of yards in NFL history.
I mean, dude, he looked like Wandell Robinson, 10 catches for 20 yards.
He did. That's what his stat line. I think it was. He had 10 catches for like 27 yards.
So look, it was pathetic. With that said, as you mentioned, that the great thing about the NFL is every game counts equally. You are 0-1, the same way the Baltimore Ravens are 0-1, the same way the Cleveland Browns are 0-1. Your season's not over because you showed up flat and you didn't try. The season's not over because you lost an away game at the division level to a Packers team that is good and has shown that they believe in their team by adding a Micah Parsons. But the problem is that all of the things that you, the majority of fans with a brain, the ones that don't blindly treat Brad Holmes and Dan Campbell as deities, saw happened. The offensive line was bad. The defensive line was bad. The coordinators were bad. That was a pathetic performance. And like you said, it doesn't end here. It's week one. And I think both of us had them 3-3 through the first six games. The only thing that really changed with that loss is that now on Sunday, it is a must-win game at home. Like
That's what my next question was going to be.
everyone knows the stats about teams that start 0-2. Everyone knows how much of a gauntlet the beginning of the schedule is. It's just, I don't understand some of the fans that sit there and have thought that a team that lost three of five interior offensive linemen, lost both coordinators, and had their star defensive player's leg turn into origami and have his first game in 9 months. How do you assume that no Aleem McNeil either? How do you assume that all of that is still going on, that you would come back to week one in early season 2024 form where you're just ragdolling teams 35-6 every weekend?
I have your answer, and it's what I said about Michigan in the reverse. They're the same fans that forgot that they were a mediocre program for 20 years prior to being good for three. They're the same fans that think because they were terrible for 55 years, that two good seasons was all of a sudden going to mean that they were going to be good every single year, no matter what they did, with no consequences. That's your answer.
And I mean, if we want to rehash this, I don't understand what the goal this offseason was. I don't understand how you let a Kevin Zeitler leave, especially after, or especially knowing a Frank Ragnow's gone. I don't understand how you tell people that we're good with Marcus Davenport as your second defensive end. There's so many things I don't understand, and it is what it is. I don't have to understand it, but I'm sure as hell going to question it because I like to believe I understand the game at a pretty good level, and I understand when there's problems.
Yep.
The last thing I'll say before I at least I wrap up my side, and it's I texted this to I think most of the friend groups I have, is my fear for this team is that by January they might be great and they might be playing incredible football, but they might have bungled themselves. And by that I
Sure.
mean you started the season 1-4, 1-5, and you're playing catch up. And if you do that, it doesn't matter how good you are in January, and if you can quote unquote beat anybody, like we always say about the Bengals, if you're not in the dance because you lost too many games in September. So that's my fear with this team, especially given how much of a gauntlet the beginning of the season is.
And especially given how this division is going to have at least two playoff teams, probably possibly even three again.
Agree. So that's kind of my wrap up here. I don't know if there's anything else you want to talk with the Lions. It is week one. We're not writing indictments here. We're not jailing anybody. We're not throwing in the towel, but there was everything that we were nervous about happened. Everything that we said would happen happened, and now we have to sit there and play the finger biting game, and Sunday becomes a very, very early must win borderline playoff game.
Yeah. Couldn't agree more.
Go Lions, right?
Go Lions. Sorry, I'm taking a puff of my inhaler as we're recording the podcast, but
Oh, look at that.
that's how much they make me nervous.
Yeah, the medical problems don't care about the pod. The medical problems appear when they want to appear. But you made it this far. Welcome back to football. The episodes just start getting longer. They should start getting more enjoyable. We should start finding more and more fun things to talk about. I will once again reiterate, go Lions, and I hope to turn it over to my co-host and my leader to have a more natural, smooth ending of this episode.
Yeah, thanks for listening, guys. Go green. We're going to be 3-0, baby.